My apologies. Thank you for being patient and waiting. We're behind schedule today, unintentional. The flight has been delayed. That's all I can say. So the next item on our agenda is the recognition of schools in Colorado's high-achieving school study. Commissioner, I'll turn it over to you.
Yes, thank you. Today we are pleased to be honoring schools from the high-achieving school study. And at this time, I will call Director Lynn Bamberry forward to tell us a little bit about the awards.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. Today, we're going to honor schools from the high-achieving school study. In 2014,
Lynn,
are we not on?
No.
You are now.
Started coming on.
All right. In 2014, the Unit of Federal Programs, in collaboration with the Exceptional Student Services Unit, conducted a rigorous study of high-achieving schools to identify and document the practices that have contributed to the school's overall performance and to the performance of the school's disaggregated groups, particularly English language learners and students with disabilities. In order to be chosen for the study, these schools demonstrate academic achievement results meeting the following criteria. Achieve a percentage of proficient and advanced in reading and math over the 60th percentile marker for the state for at least four disaggregated groups. The school performance framework at the performance level. Have earned and exceeds or meets on academic achievement indicator and have a poverty rate of over 10%. Findings are disseminated to the field that highlight the effective practices that have been or could be supported and replicated in other schools with federal funding, ESSA or IDEA. In addition, grant funds were put into a grant program called Connect for Success to replicate the practices documented in the high-achieving schools in struggling Title I schools. The schools that are here today have opened their doors to 28 low-achieving high Title I sites to come view their effective practices and have participated in networking days to talk about not only what works, but how to make it work. And I can't tell you how much we appreciate them letting us crash their buildings and talk to everyone from teachers, parents, paras, district personnel over a three-year period and their willingness to share their practices, commitment, and time to increase achievement in all of the schools throughout the state. So in appreciation, once we're done, we have a certificate and a banner for you. And I would like to introduce each of the applicants to come talk to you. So we'll have Roberto Ballard from Canyon Creek Elementary and Cherry Creek School District, Christina Hendricks from Tivoli Elementary and Poudre School District, Lauren Hua from South Lakewood Elementary and Jeffco, Kelly O'Neill from Soaring Eagles and Harrison 2, and Karen McClure, who's representing Janice Hughes, since Janice is out cruising, from Burlington Elementary and St. Vrain. So, Roberta, if you'd like to start.
So I'd just like to say that I am so honored when they announced our school to be awarded, and it was a wonderful experience to have them come in and talk with our families and with our students and with our teachers just to find out what it is we were doing at Canyon Creek to make a difference for students every day. And I had the unfortunate but also fortunate piece to go and transfer to a new school, and so I've been at Arrowhead Elementary for the past 2 years, but what I feel fortunate is to be able to take that information from the study to my new school and be able to replicate some of the things that I've learned from the other schools involved as well, which has been wonderful for me as a principal to connect with principals from across the state and take that information and be able to use it towards the students that I have at Arrowhead Elementary. So I'm just honored to be here, and I appreciate being part of this continued support for us as principals. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Christine Hendricks, principal at Tivoli Elementary in Fort Collins. I've had the honor of hosting probably 20 schools that have been part of this Connect for Success. And it is the most delightful experience, and I hope it's as delightful for them as it is for us, because we learn so much in having that dialogue and that conversation with them and talking about our structures, and our teachers are so proud. Because it's affirming to them of the hard work that they're doing, And it's really great opportunity for them to kind of celebrate their successes that they've experienced. And also for us to talk to them about, these are things we still need to work on. And we learn from each other, even the schools that may be struggling a little bit, they have a lot of great things going on. So we try to be their cheerleader and give them the ideas and the ideas to help support them. So it's really been quite an honor and a great experience for our school and for me personally. So thank you for that, Lynn, and everybody else. And it's just been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Lauren Huat. I'm the principal at South Lakewood Elementary in Jeffco, and I'd like to thank CDE and the board for the recognition of this award. It was just a few short years ago that my school was a low-performing school. It was in our SPF came across, and we were a needs improvement school. And with the work and hard work of and dedicated staff members, we were able to turn that around and able to share this now with the folks coming in for the CDE grant and working with them. And also in working with them, we were able to refine our practices to bring even more to our students. So it's been a learning experience for them, but it's also been a great experience working with these folks here and these other schools. It's been a great experience and bringing about opportunities for my kids too. But thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm Kelly O'Neill, and I have with me today Kim Easton and Jen Locke. They've been with me a combined total of 27 years, so it's,
wow.
I feel very fortunate to have such an incredibly dedicated team. I actually want to stop and thank the Connect for Success group and the State Department of Education. I think you guys got it right. To see is to believe. And you allowed schools that were struggling a chance to go out and see what it could be like and to start dreaming about making changes in their building. And to have schools come in the morning, they spend all day with you, and the first thing you see is closed body language, and they start blocking, you know. And by the end of the day, they've begun to dream about how they can make changes in their school, because what they see is there's no magic bullet. It's processes, it's quality teaching, it's aligned curriculum, it's research best practices, and everyone is doing the same thing. And I think by the end of the day, they all realize that could be them. And so it's very exciting, and thank you very much for honoring us today.
Hi, my name is Karen McClure, and I am very fortunate to be the principal of Burlington Elementary School. What more could you ask for as a principal than to inherit a high-achieving school? So every day I see those practices in action. I've been part of St. Vrain Valley Schools for close to 15 years, and Burlington's reputation is well known there, so I want to thank you very much for allowing us to shine our light a little bit brighter to a wider audience. I also want to thank our school district that has really supported innovation, and the work's not over. We continue with that. And I would also like to share with you that Janice Hughes, who has been the principal at Burlington prior to me for 23 years, is on a vacation in the Baltic, well-deserved, although I will tell you that she texted me on my drive here. And we have a videotape message from her for you to see. So if you could play that for us, that would be great, and thank you so much.
And members of the Colorado State Board of Education for recognizing the Burlington Elementary School community's focus on academic achievement success for all of our students. We accomplished these results through strong, consistent collaboration, in our trust in each other, and in the fact that we know that we can and will make a difference for each and every one of our students. I wish I could be there with you today, but on behalf of our Burlington staff, our Burlington parents, and our students, Karen and I accept this honor.
Thank you so much. We commend you for your dedication to sharing your practices with other schools in the state to increase student achievement. and inspiring other schools to reach higher levels of performance. Please join me again in honoring our high-achieving schools. When I call each of you up, please come forward to have your photo taken with the commissioner and your representative board member. Thank you. First of all, Daryl Sigmund, Canyon Creek Elementary. Pam?
Oh, yep.
It's not for school.
If he doesn't come back.
I think I am saying right
here.
Oh.
This Burlington Elementary. I know.
set.
Oh, I'm not.
There's a discussion, and then
School. Case number 17-AR-09. Public testimony will not be heard at this time. However, department staff, district staff, and legal counsel are available to only answer any final questions we may have. Neither the department nor district may provide any additional information unless requested by the state board. Colleagues, do you have any questions?
Welcome to the Meeting One conferencing service.
You are on the air right now. Those that are on the telephone, you are on the air.
Sounds like a radio show.
Do we have any questions from the board? Discussion? Concerns?
Waiting for someone to have a question or a discussion.
Do you want to start? I just want to say something.
The discussion, please do.
I just want to.
Board Member Goff.
Thank you. I would like to acknowledge the work of staff and the people in the Huerfano district. I think this is something that we had. Speaking for myself, but I want to express, I felt very comfortable when we finished the hearing. And we had the discussion, and it was incumbent on the parties at that time, the department and the district, to work together to come up with this plan. And I do think that for that unique context that they came away with, this is something that looks promising, and we really do. I feel good. I feel confident that this will be on the road, down the road to a good place for everybody. So thank you.
Board Member Masner?
It doesn't happen very often, but I agree with Director DeGoff.
It does too happen.
No, I want to commend the work done by staff, of course, but particularly Huerfano School District. I think they were very proactive, have taken this seriously for a very long time. So I think I'm very impressed with the work, and I am very hopeful that it's going to make a big difference.
Any other comments? Do you have a motion, please?
I move to approve. Do you need it to be?
Yeah. get your stuff. Yeah.
Director McClellan has it. She
okay.
can move.
Move to approve the final resolution. Yep. Yeah. Just. Yep. That's correct.
Correct.
I move to approve the final written determination as proposed by the department and district to direct Peakview School to implement its pathway proposal for its external management agreement with Generation Schools Network as filed with the State Board of Education on June 6, 2017.
Do I have a second?
I second it.
Thank you. Vote, please.
Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Masnack.
Yes.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rinkin.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes. Oh, I see. We failed to read another piece. Shouldn't change anything, but within 30 days of receiving a copy of the written final determination, the district or institute shall agree to implement the directed action pursuant to terms to be specified in a revised version of the accreditation contract. Signed copies of the revised contract will be made available to both parties. Thank you very much. Okay.
All right. Do we need to get them off the line, Ms. Corder?
Oh, yep.
And I want to thank Peakview for listening in, and congratulations and best of luck. This is Joyce Rankin from your district.
Hi.
Thank you, State Board.
You're welcome. No, they're all for you.
Thank you. You shouldn't have.
Thank you.
We're doing this right now.
Yeah.
Next item, the board will now consider and adopt final written determinations for the accountability recommendations concerning Bessemer Elementary, Heroes Middle School, and Risley International Academy of Innovation, case number 17AR06. Public testimony will not be heard at this time. However, the department staff, district staff, and legal counsel are available only to answer any final questions we may have. Neither the department nor district may provide additional information unless requested by the state board. And I should ask Pueblo folks to come forward because I believe we probably will have some questions. Jumpy about those kind of sounds today, if you don't mind. colleagues, questions? I have some. So, in reading about all three schools in the district itself, I'm seeing an awful lot of turnover. So, and there's no, I didn't find any explanations for the turnover. How are we assured that this isn't a pretty constant activity in Pueblo schools, whether it's for these three schools or in central administration?
Thank you for the question. Chairwoman Schroeder and Commissioner Anthes, members of the Board of Education, it is true that we have had some turnover both in leadership and both with teachers within the three schools. We have worked very hard to ensure that we have principals in place at the three schools. We have one more to hire at one of our schools, but we are confident that we have leaders that possess the turnaround competencies to move the schools forward. Even just in the last 6 weeks since the last time that we were here, we have hired people at the central administration that we feel very confident in. I would like to introduce you to Ms. Suzanne Morey, who has significant experience in turnaround and significant experience in instruction, and she will serve as my assistant superintendent. And so we also have had some hiring in terms of central administration. We have hired a continuous executive director of continuous improvement and innovation, and that is Mr. Ted Johnson, and he also has extensive experience in turnaround and has worked collaboratively with Colorado Department of Education. And so we really feel confident that we are building our team. It is true that our team has been in transition over the last year, but we feel confident that moving into next school year that we have built the appropriate team needed to advance our organization, both at the school level and the district level.
Except you didn't answer my question. Have you done an analysis as to why you have the level of turnover that you have in your district?
I think one of the contributing factors is the fact that that our schools are in turnaround, that they are high poverty. There was some uncertainty in regard to what was the status of our schools, quite frankly, in regard to the management partnership, moving towards innovation and so forth. So that actually contributed to a little instability within the staff. As we move forth with innovation, the two of the schools voted predominantly in favor of the going towards innovation, and those staff members within the school that didn't agree with that did execute an opt-out process. So some staff changes results because of that method and that process.
So you moved teachers in order to bring in teachers who supported innovation? Did I understand what you meant?
So we have a staff commitment form, and so we're very clear going into an innovation school that this is how we're going to operate from this point forward, and so we're very clear about those high expectations and those commitments, and so we do give staff an opportunity to opt out if they are not committed to advancing the innovation plan.
In
yes.
All three schools?
The process at Bessemer and Heroes happened recently. The process at Risley
was already
in place previously.
Pardon me, you're right. So 90% is a lot of teachers. Did they stay in the district and go elsewhere?
No, 90% was in favor.
No, the 90% of the turnover in Bessemer. I believe it was Bessemer that had 90% turnover?
Not to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, then I misread that.
No.
90% of the staff was in favor of moving.
Okay, that's why that didn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah.
Been doing too much reading.
That would be very concerning.
It was, but I can't read, so I have a reading deficiency. I looked at your schedule, your daily schedule that you have available, but then I also read that, and it's fairly compact in that you've got PLC in the morning, but then everything else I'm pretty sure is about student contact. And I couldn't figure out how once a week you would have all teacher meetings in the school. I've been trying to figure out your scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
How are you different from the rest? How are these schools different from the rest of the calendars in the district? And then how do you actually manage all the time together among teachers, given that you've extended the learning for kids?
Sure. Would you like to respond to that?
Sure. Madam Chair Schroeder and Commissioner Anthes, members of the board. I'm Suzanne Morey. I am the newly hired, very excited to be hired and working in Pueblo, Assistant Superintendent of Teaching and Learning Services. And to answer your question specifically, I think you're talking about Bessemer's plan specifically. And so at the beginning of the school day, every single teacher has an opportunity for a PLC for 45 minutes, but there's also the opportunity, since everybody has that time at the same time, to come together as a whole staff as necessary, to come together vertically as well as horizontally. And so that time is there for to serve a variety of different purposes and to be scheduled out as needed. And so then you, okay. You are correct. The rest of the time is focused on student contact time, both intervention time as well as very specific segments of time for extended literacy blocks, extended math blocks, as well as the enrichment and the integrated science and social studies that align with their instructional programming.
And then at the elementary school level, students, teachers don't actually have a free period as such.
So they have time off during specials, during their arts sections. And in fact, at Bessemer, there one time a week, they were strategic in their scheduling to also schedule an additional technology time that aligns with their STEM programming. And so one day a week, they'll actually have a double block of time for extended planning time and collaborative planning time
and
with their grade level team.
And mentoring time.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
It's a pretty intense scheduling. How do you plan to expand parent engagement in your schools, all three of them? There's very little in your materials
I appreciate that feedback from CDE. We did receive some very specific and helpful comments last night in the rubric response, and I did certainly notice the parent engagement piece. I think there are pieces that are outlined in the innovation plan specifically. So for example, I know STEM has different evening activities where they bring the teachers in as a more of a student celebration of the work that they're doing and that sort of thing. I know they have an accountability board, and they were actually very excited because they have now, they've struggled to get parent engagement, and they now, because of the innovation plan and working that process with all the stakeholders, they have some parents who are really interested in being on the accountability committee going into next year. So I think that you'll see improvement there, but I also think it was feedback well taken to bring back to their team and their school-based accountability to add some additional measures in that area. So legitimate feedback.
And these are Title I schools, and they do have unified school improvement plans, and so they're required under Title I to provide outreach for parents according to, around standards or the instructional practices that are at the school. The schools are really focusing on an advocacy piece, how to talk to parents and engage parents in terms of how do they advocate for their students, the importance of attendance, mm-hmm. monitoring grades, and so forth.
So Ms. Sanchez, in general, what sort of outreach do you have as a board to the overall district to ensure that you have high levels of engagement from your community?
Well, one of the things that we did definitely with these schools, particularly, I mean, we have done some town hall meetings in the past where we're doing them in quadrants, talking about specific things. But with these three schools, we actually, the board did attend parent meetings. And so I think that when you start talking about changes in a school or any kind of changes that might happen with staff or curriculum, we actually, Bessemer had a very high mm-hmm. turnout of parents who came and were engaged and actually talked to the board about, you know, they want to become more engaged, they want to keep their school, they want to see their kids do well. So I think that in retrospect, that actually was a catalyst mm-hmm. for parents to become more involved and truly become stakeholders in what's happening rather than spectators. So that was something that we initiated with these plans, were actual meetings in their school communities in which either the entire board or most of the board attended those evening meetings to hear comments from parents, to take questions, and to listen to their concerns. And many of them did contact the board. So I think that even at something that seemed very difficult for those school communities, I think it was a catalyst for that engagement and recognizing the fact that we parents have to be our partners in the success and what happens. And we need to be able to support that.
And what are your plans for sustaining that now that you got them?
They were part of the plan, and our plan is to keep going back and talking about the progress, very regularly, and talking about what's working, what's not working, get their perspective on what's happening, because these plans, they will continue to be engaged as stakeholders and not be, our goal is not to lose them in that probability, because Bessemer was probably one of the lowest parent engagement schools, and it turned out to be the school that had the highest parent engagement. So I think that what we learned from that is that parents, we need to work with them, we need to talk to them about all of the things that that Ms. Morey discussed, in the fact that, you know, how we can become better partners and what their role can be, especially in that advocacy piece. Because I think a lot of times what happens in poverty areas is parents just trust schools to do the right thing. But they also need to advocate and ask questions of us and hold us accountable.
I think what was very evident in the listening tour is that there is a need for additional education around accountability and the pathways and so forth. And so as we continue with the innovation plan, there needs to be that ongoing conversation to bring our stakeholders in, to continue to educate them in the process and what, you know, what we're doing, what the plans look like, how we're executing that, how we're monitoring the effectiveness, our success, and you know, the needs and so forth. So definitely a need for ongoing conversation.
And I think another good part of that was really, I think, the comprehension of the partnership, that we're not working in isolation as a district or as a school building or as parents, but this really is, you know, a collaborative partnership, and we are all partners in seeing their children succeed. I think that was a big message, I think, that parents felt was important to hear.
So you use the term monitoring. So we have received the same thing that you all received and have had absolutely no time to look at it. But there are some certain things that jump out, and one of them is the lack of a clear monitoring plan at this point.
So I would really like to address that. In the management plans, in each of the management plans, there actually is, I think, a pretty well-articulated monitoring plan. So, for example, monthly, there will be monthly walkthroughs at each of the schools that will be a combination of myself, the principal manager, the executive director, who coaches the principal weekly in the building, and a commitment to that, our ANET partners, and a walkthrough to monitor the progress month to month to month. Each quarter there is a written report that is collaboratively written with our management partner, with ANET, that will be distributed to our Board of Education, to the schools, so that they can share it with their communities, both their staff and school communities, as well as the larger parent community. And it's also going to be sent to CDE, so that's quarterly. And so there's a pretty tight monitoring, and the understanding is that it's not just monitoring progress, but it's also course correction. And I've already even had a conversation with the principal supervisor around their work in supporting the principal month to month with the implementation of the next steps, the voice around it, the accountability around it, especially if it's going to be a shift in practice or whatever those decisions are made. And so in that way, there's a pretty tight accountability and monitoring of the goals that are set along the way, with an opportunity to make changes as needed.
Is your ANET representative here with you today?
Yes, we have two ANET leads who will be serving our schools, and I'd love to bring them up to the table at this point if you have questions for them. As they're walking up, what I would like to share is that both of these leaders have experience in turnaround, and they both have worked with our district before, and we feel that's one of the strengths of this particular management partnership decision, is that we can build off of some strengths that have already been established in relationships.
Okay, let me pass this over to Ms. Rankin.
Welcome. I have a couple of questions, but not specifically for you at this particular point. I want to ask CDE a question. What is the fourth grade reading scores? Proficiency in reading, I'm sorry. Fourth grade proficiency of reading percentage-wise in Bessemer Elementary School. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. For a week.
It's because we have something sales for, isn't it? Do you want to ask another question, then we'll follow up? Or do you want to wait? Sorry. You're asking a harder question from where the data is hidden.
Yeah. Board Member Mazin? I'm trying to find something, too.
I have a question. What was, excuse me, I did not write down your name. What was your
name?
And
I may not have even said it. My name is Suzanne Morey.
I think you did say it. And then when I heard Morey, I wasn't sure if that was short for Maureen or something.
Oh.
So I didn't write down your name. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how long have you been with the district?
So this is my fourth week with the district. So I was present in this boardroom at your last meeting on April 24th. That was before I was officially hired. But knowing that I was very interested in the position, I just attended as an audience member. And so I've been following the needs and the requests from the Board of Education, what was needed. My background is that I have been a principal at all three levels, so elementary, middle, and high school levels. Particularly in turnaround schools. I was a turnaround principal, for example, at McGlone Elementary in Denver when we started the DSSN in Denver. McGlone has been quite successful, and we were able in 2 years to get out of turnaround there. And in fact, even Secretary Arne Duncan came and recognized us for being a successful turnaround school. My first principalship was actually in Aurora Public Schools. I was at Crawford Elementary. At that time, the school was identified as a corrective action school and ended up receiving the governor's award for significant improvement and was able to get that school out of corrective action. So I've also had district-level experience in training leaders and instructional leaders, deans of instruction, as well as principals, and supporting curriculum efforts as well. So. That's my background.
How's it going?
I got it. Sorry for the delay.
It only took one question.
So in 2016, Bessemer, fourth graders in English language arts, there was 22% of students met or exceeded the expectations with 100% participation.
So 22% were proficient in reading?
Yeah, the level 4 or 5.
And I wanted to bring that to light. It's been a question of mine. 22% is kind of low. However, in 1997, 12% of the fourth graders at Bessemer Elementary School were proficient in reading. It was lowest in the state. We have a great example of evidence-based learning here. Evidence-based learning comes up 60 times in ESSA. Actually, it's more than 60 times from the article you gave me. Evidence-based programs under the right leadership will change reading and math scores for students. Unfortunately, we never have a direct correlation between evidence-based programs with exactly the same student environment and culture until now. Again, 1997, 12% of the fourth graders were proficient in reading, lowest in the state. They brought in a program called Lindemood Bell Learning Program. It included teacher development, stakeholder support, administrative leadership, and district support. The academic achievement scores improved in 3 years, from 1997 to 2000. The scores went from 12% proficient in reading to 80% proficiency. State average that year was 60%. Bessemer was highlighted nationally for their success. I believe this could have been repeated. I was wondering why we didn't try this program again. Was it even in the offering? And I have to say, I'm not convinced that the program that was presented to us is going to make that dramatic change, and especially change takes time. And this was 3 years that we saw this dramatic improvement. And it was in the past. History can repeat itself. I'm not quite sure the dramatic change required by the board to make these decisions from 2009 legislators is in this program we currently have. The outside management here, to me, needs to be the ultimate decision maker. It's that outside management that turned Bessemer Elementary School around before, and I feel it might do it this time, even though it's not the Lindmood Bell program, but I'm not sure why we haven't tried that. I think we've got to focus again on the students in Pueblo. I'm very concerned about the students. I've always have been. I've brought this up numerous times. But we have to make dramatic change in management, and that is the direction that our last meeting we were voting for and we're pulling for. I think we need to work on that a little bit more. And I just wanted to bring this to light. Thank you for those scores, CDE. Thanks for the work that you do.
Board Member Masnick, did you lead me to believe you had some more questions?
I do. I would like to ask some questions of the management partner we're calling you so far. Do you feel able and willing to take over the management of all three schools?
Yes, my name is Catherine Deek. I'm the executive director of our Colorado network. And I do because of our continuation of our collaboration, because we have been working successfully with schools, including Risley being one of them and Heroes this year. I feel very confident because of our established relationship and collaboration, we are able to take it over in a sense where we see change.
Thank you.
Yes. You have some more?
One more question. It doesn't look like Pueblo's latest proposal includes that the management company would be in charge. Is it your wish that you still collaborate and make decisions together, or that the district would still be in charge, have the final say?
So within the management plan that we have submitted, really outlines a partnership. And we have really identified the matrix in regard to the decision-making around the various operational elements and structures within the school. And so I'm not sure what page that is. On page 68 of the management plan clearly articulates the various decision-making, whether it's collaborative
64 through 66.
Yes, or whether it lies with the management partnership, but clearly it's a collaboration and a partnership from our view.
Well,
you can speak more about that.
So I'm a small business owner, and my attorney always said you can't have a 50-50 partnership. Somebody has to be able to be the tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. So that's my concern here. I think we discussed it the last time you were before us, and somebody has to be the tiebreaker, and that's why I ask. I think that it's important that a management partner who is maybe a little more objective be the tiebreaker in this case.
Did you want to speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So ANET leaders and myself and our school spent quite a bit of time talking through all the different systems that would be in place in a school and identifying the specific decision areas that would need to be made, and then in any area that ANET is providing direct support to us, who would be the final decision-making authority if there could not be an agreed-upon decision collaboratively. And so for each of the areas, and this is where the matrix comes in, for each of the areas we identified either ANET would have final decision-making in that area, or the district school would have final decision-making. And this is, again, if we couldn't collaborate on the final decision. Or in the event that that you see X's in both of the columns, if we couldn't agree, then the final decision-making authority would go to our superintendent. We were very thoughtful about where we put these X's and why some were collaborative as opposed to just giving ANET final authority. We really wanted to respect the integrity of the innovation plans and the stakeholders who voted on them and the autonomies that innovation plans do provide to schools to make school-based decisions for their stakeholders and the waivers that were approved. And so if it was something very specific to a waiver, for example, we made sure that that was a collaborative decision. And it was out of respect for the innovation plan and the stakeholders who voted that plan in.
Board Member Flores.
That's, I would tend to agree with you, except when you're looking at innovation, which in a sense is different. It's a new look, it's a new path that the school is taking, and then you have a management plan, management company that really is, you're paying the money to have them devote the time for that path and that plan. So it's almost as if for the worth the money to kind of allow them to help you kind of look in a different way, a fresh way through the school. It was that last question that was asked and how you answered that kind of led me to thinking this, because my question was going to be on curricula. And I'm still going to ask that question, but I'm just wondering whether you could just mull in your mind a little bit more of why you brought in this management company and think about, you know, the newness of kind of seeing it that way. I'll go into my curriculum. Are you, and I'll ask this of the management company, are you thinking of a curriculum? Have you discussed a curriculum? And would you share that with us?
So at this time, we would be honoring the schools and the curriculum offered currently at the schools. In our role as the management partner, we would be looking at how to deepen teachers' understanding of that particular curriculum.
And so what is a curriculum?
The curriculum, I'll let you see.
Yeah. So I know that Bessemer is a STEM school, so there is some curriculum that's very specific to that. Journeys, for example, is the elementary reading curriculum. But again, curriculum is a resource.
Right.
And it's not the only resource. We need to make sure that our teachers understand the standards and they understand the students in front of them.
Well, you would hope.
And
that.
Then select and make strategic decisions around the use of the curriculum that is best going to support the grouping of students and so forth in attainment and progress toward the standards. And so, again, we are using in Bessemer's case, for example, we're using the district reading curriculum as the base curriculum. But that is something that as they go on and they see, oh, we have some holes in our curriculum, do we want to suggest a change in collaboration with ANET? That would be part of the ongoing discussion and progress monitoring of success.
Okay, so that would be an open kind of discussion.
If it came up as a need.
You haven't had success. Now remember, you haven't had success with a curricula. So you're going to look at it in a fresh new way. And I was thinking that the curricula that you chose would have embedded in it the standards, the state standards that are there. And probably, you know, that's...
Sure, it absolutely is aligned. The Journeys Houghton Mifflin is aligned to the state standards. ANET provides us an opportunity to dig deeper into the standards for teachers to have a deep understanding of the standards and then how to effectively deliver quality instruction as a result of that. So the curriculum resources are merely a resource, and then identifying what is the highest leverage standards to teach it at what time, the schedule of assessed standards, and so forth.
So am I correct to think that it's a STEM program that's Mifflin is responsible for that includes the standards, that the standards are embedded?
The curriculum resources are aligned to the standards, yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple questions for the ANET people. Tell me a little bit about your company. How big is it? How many employees? How many states are you doing business? Gross revenues, if you know it, off the top of your head, that sort of thing?
I think I can answer some of those. My name is Laura Brinkman, and I serve as our Regional Director of New Partnerships with the Achievement Network. Our organization, we are 11 years old. We were founded by educators for educators back in Boston 11 years ago. We currently support over 700 schools across the nation. Our work in Colorado began 4 years ago with a very small pilot in Denver Public Schools with four schools, and we have now, we're the fastest growing network in our organization. This year we've had over 100 partners, and next year we're going to land around 50, 60 partners here in the state. I don't know our gross revenue. I don't know those numbers. We are, you know, even though we're a nonprofit, we obviously still have to make money, right? But we don't come at it from the way we judge our impact. We're obsessed with student outcomes and teacher outcomes and district outcomes. So we position ourselves that's the bottom line we pay the most attention to, is the impact that we're having. Our impact that we have across the nation, we're very proud of. 3 years ago, we did a very in-depth study, part of the Harvard I3 work. And in that work is where we have really deeply codified the practices that we have in support of our schools. So what we have found is that where we have these more intensive partnerships and we have more intensive what we call system support, which is part of what this management plan is grounded in, that these are the areas where we're seeing very rapid results, much like the results that were pointed out earlier back in 1997 with the Bessemer work, to see that kind of work happen in a 3-year period of time. What our data shows us that where our schools have, where the partnership has led to what we call level 2, where we are seeing those students have 6 to 8 months additional learning in that year. So those are the schools where we're closing the gap across the nation. We have those kind of results very deliberately in Massachusetts and some of our work in Illinois. And that's the kind of planning we're bringing forward with this. So I don't know our gross revenue. And as far as employees in our organization, 156 employees in our organization. I just had Catherine Deek whisper that in my ear. So
that's a pretty tight estimate, yeah.
I know. That was really good, yeah. Wasn't it?
That's very good. Yeah. So can you describe your what you believe is the ideal relationship between your company and a school district that is in having some degree of problem?
Sure. You want me to do that? I think the ideal relationship, and I'm going to answer this from the perspective that I also had when I worked in Denver Public Schools. I was an instructional superintendent there, and ANET was a partner, and I think the ideal relationship started with trust. We had a lot of relational trust. You have to be vulnerable, so being vulnerable with each other about what hasn't worked, and being able to face a lot of hard facts together. I think it's also a perfect relationship when you're willing to really look at equity and you're really willing to look very deeply at the students in your school district and schools that aren't being served and having those honest conversations. So I think it's ideally a lot of relational trust, ability that you want to be honest, you want to be vulnerable.
Those are a little too touchy-feely for me.
I'll get to the hardcore.
Let's focus on the hardcore of span of control, who makes decisions, how those decisions are made, how those decisions are enforced.
So the balance of accountability and responsibility. I mean, I believe that, as the superintendent has stated, you know, that there is the decisions that we have agreed upon with them, that decision-making matrix, because they're the ultimate accountability when it lies within the superintendent, her team. I mean, I believe she has to be in a position with her team to operate and exercise that she has ultimate accountability. I believe it's our responsibility as their management partner and as an instructional support team with them to...
Well, there's at least one reading of the statute that would dictate an opposite result.
Well, an opposite, but in this
that you're in charge. How do you feel about you being in charge?
About us being completely in charge of everything?
Of everything that by law you would be allowed to be in charge of.
I believe the way that we've entered into this agreement, the way that we've written it, we haven't written it with that perspective. We haven't written it that we
are
ultimately
in
charge.
Do you have any agreements, any place in the country where that would tend to be the result?
No, as an organization, we don't have any agreements where we are ultimately like the absolute final decision maker in that broad spectrum. There are agreements where more decision-making influence over principal hiring, more decision-making over maybe budget things, more decision-making over, like, to the question of, like, tighter dictating what kind of curriculum or resources you may use. But we don't have anything where we are, like, ultimately now that final decision-maker, no.
Well, you look at this matrix and you see some of the things that I would at least think perhaps one of the most critical is curricula selection. You apparently have no input on that at all. If I page 64, is that correct?
So
is that what the matrix says? Or
yeah, you're absolutely right. That is what the matrix says. Since this has been turned into you, however, we've had this conversation and we have agreed to shift that to be collaborative because we had a long conversation about how curriculum and the impact of that. So you're right. That's what it says in what, but that has been changed, but not in your document yet.
Where else?
Where else
have you made changes? If you...
That's the only change that we have officially made at this point.
Go ahead, Mr. Durham. I'm sorry.
Thank
and
you.
I do like our, we do have strong opinions about curriculum, but we've entered into a partnership with Pueblo where they have some curriculum chosen. And one of the organizing principles we work with is that alignment of your curriculum, your professional development aligned to assessments. So, I mean, we enter in with that orientation. And if we, when we see things that aren't aligned, we're going to say something. We're going to call it out. And that's our obligation as part of this management partnership.
I think more importantly than the selection of the curriculum is really about the process that ANET comes forth with in terms of executing and how that curriculum is delivered.
Right. And it's execution.
So how much time are you? Are you two individuals the ones who will be the primary overseers of this agreement?
Go ahead.
One or both of you?
It's a combination of school and district oversight. So between the two of us, I will be directly coaching the executive director of innovation and then working with Suzanne Morey as well. And then we have instructional coaches that are trained to work at the school level. So each of the schools will receive an instructional coach that will be there on a weekly basis. So, and then Laura Brinkman will be helping with the monthly and quarterly site visits to be able to be sure that we are having a full lens in our organization as well in what is working and what needs to be adjusted.
So approximately in the average week, how many hours would you spend in Pueblo, either in district or in one of the schools?
As an organization.
Are there others?
So two other
how much time will they spend?
So they will spend once a week, approximately one day a week in the district. At each of the schools, we'll have one day a week. And then I would be there approximately three times a month.
But you'll have one person that'll be there every day.
No.
No.
Once a week for a full day.
In your experience, I mean, this has been, and obviously we didn't get to this point overnight. There have been six consecutive years of what the legislature would define as unacceptable performance. Do you generally get called in only when there's a crisis, which I would characterize this, or on occasion do people bring you in to avoid a crisis?
Yes, so we do not only get called in for a crisis. We currently work in Colorado with some of the highest performing charter CMO districts as well, and districts and schools. So we do both work with higher performing schools and then also targeted work, more intensive work like this management plan with schools like the ones in Pueblo.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I want to clarify what I think the commissioner just pointed out to me. I believe this started out as an innovation plan with management, and I think there is a strong feeling, given the innovation plan, that it just wasn't really strong enough, and that we are talking about a management. And so Board Member Durham's questions about whether you've ever actually completely controlled comes from one of the options that we have, which is something on that order. And I think the concern that we had was partly with this sharing and the fact that ultimately it's the district that continues to control pretty much as what's happening here and whether that's going to be sufficient. So I think I just want you to get a sense of where we are here. We're really not sure just exactly what we're going to be recommending. I have to tell you that because we got everything as late as you got everything, we're not prepared to take a vote today. We're going to put this off in the hopes that we'll have something maybe by tomorrow to vote on. But we still have questions. Sure. Please.
Madam Chair, I would like to just say that we did submit and bring forth what we believe to be a viable innovation plan for both Bessemer and for HEROES, which the last time in April 24th, we didn't have a fully comprehensive plan, and we really do feel like we do have one now. CDE has reviewed that, and they did say that it meets all of the requirements of the rubric and all of the standards.
Not actually.
So we do.
No, there are places where it's only partial. And that's my concern today.
Right.
There are
places the overall where rating was that it met all of these standards.
Right.
And then
there
are some suggestions. Absolutely.
That we probably want you to be thinking about and want staff to be
sure.
thinking about. Any other comments, questions, concerns, folks? Are you ready to table this until tomorrow? I'm struggling with not having, I guess maybe I should listen to staff. You know, we got this stuff way, way, way too fast. Understandably, everything was on a delay, but we have a motion.
Well, let me ask one question.
Please.
How do we end up being so late? Do you want to blame the staff, or is it the fact that you were slow in providing materials? How do we end up? I mean, we've been at this off and on for 6 years, and here we are up against a June 30th deadline. How do we end up at this point with Pueblo? And I don't think we've ended up in this time frame with any, or this time crunch with anybody else that's on the clock.
Thank you, Board Member Durham, for the question. Both of these schools, Bessemer and HEROES specifically, had a pathways implementation, pathways planning grant that we went to the stakeholders, and we were operating from that we would go forth with an innovation plan. And the last time that we came in April, that recommendation and the recommendation from CDE that we got at that time was that it was a management partnership plan. There was some confusion in regard to how we feel that we had been consulted in terms of what the definition of a management partnership plan was. And so I think that confusion contributed to where we were. Within the time that we were last here,
merely 6 weeks, I think that we have really placed ourselves in a position of strength, that we have really been diligent about bringing forth the documents and the plans necessary that we were asked for in terms of an innovation plan, and to really look strategically and intentionally about what are the needs for these schools, what is the possible partnership. We have an existing very positive working relationship with Achievement Network that we have had very much success with and with several of our schools in the Innovation Zone. And so we feel like Achievement Network really did meet the needs that were presented in those two schools. And so going with the definition that we was our understanding of a management partnership plan, that's why we brought forth those plans in conjunction with an innovation plan.
Did you have a hard time getting your stakeholders on board? Anybody any difficulty with that? And do you think the stakeholders gave up enough or brought enough to the table to make this a worthwhile exercise?
I think we had full support of all of our stakeholders. They really worked they
in your
worked
opinion,
diligently.
Did they give up anything? Did the stakeholders give up anything? Anybody give up anything in the union contract?
I think the waivers through the innovation, they're giving up, obviously, a lot in the union contract with the waivers.
Do you have a list of that someplace?
Those are listed specifically in the innovation plans of each of the schools.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Board Member McClellan?
Actually, Chairman Schroeder, before we get a motion potentially to table the issue, I think one important question to ask, at least for my clarity, and if in advising the board, is about the willingness of the external management partner here to take on full management everywhere permitted by law, if they're willing to do that. Because I think if there is a potential option for a full takeover suggested by the department's plan, is that going to be them, or would it be somebody else potentially who's doing that? Because I think that would really guide the order that would be written about a potential takeover of management.
I thought I asked that, and I thought they said yes.
Perhaps it was my misunderstanding, but I just want to make sure that, at least for my purposes, it's clear.
So in the 17-18 school year, we would not have the capacity for a complete management takeover of those three schools if we were talking about full authority in all decision-making areas.
Rebecca? Would you have the capacity at one of the campuses, two of the campuses? When would capacity be present? Or in the event that the board wanted to move forward with such a model, would it be necessary to find a different management partner?
I mean, I think yes, if we were just talking about a full intensive partnership, full management of one of the campuses, that would be possible. We would have to shift then away from the support of the other schools, which I would not necessarily be in favor.
May I ask a follow-up?
Yeah.
Is this just a capacity issue, or is it with respect to the size of the staffing at ANET presently?
Correct. And I think we historically would want to go into a strong partnership with the district, would not want to come in as a full authority without that collaboration.
I think it's important to understand that we selected ANET based on a very specific area of need. And so we are targeting a specific area of need, not all of school operations with ANET in terms of what they can provide.
May I ask one more follow-up? As we're looking at the plan that you submitted, it looks like an almost 50-50 partnership until you get right down to the wire and then the district has final authority under your submitted plan. If that partnership really is as 50-50 as it kind of sounds like, then I'm having some confusion as to why it is that there's absolutely not the capacity to be the final decision maker if you can be 49.999. I guess that's what I'm struggling with right now, because what we're looking at is final authority to make sure that the management partner has the traction that they need to make the substantial changes that are necessary. And I speak only for myself and not for the entire board, obviously, but that's what I'm struggling with right now.
And I think when we're speaking in areas of instruction and assessment, those would be the areas I would say we could take full authority. But when we're talking about general operation of the school, those are not areas that we typically focus on in our partnerships with schools.
We're not asking, I think, in the area of parents mm-hmm. or any such thing, but academically, cognitively, I think that would be the sense that we're thinking about.
So if I could just clarify, and going back to what you said, Board Member Flores, in regard to, I think we all have the same goal, and that's increased student achievement. And we know right. that those are some of the systems that need to be in place, like the data-driven instruction and so forth. In the event that we're talking about a calendar, for example, and ANET says we need these specific days built into the calendar, and the school says, well, we have innovation and we have the authority to build our calendar, and they can't come to a collaboration, just as an example, then it would resort back to Ms. Morey and I, and we would say, here's what we're trying to advance. So absolutely, we're going to build a calendar to include those particular days at this particular time to analyze the data and so forth to advance that initiative.
Okay.
So and so that's was our thinking.
That's 49.99.
Right. That's what that was our thinking behind the ultimate authority. If there's a dispute, would the superintendent would settle that? That was the thinking.
Well, that's still not. Maybe the 0.99. Maybe if we said 49.51, I guess would that be such a big difference if it was the management company doing 51, meaning they really have the authority, ultimately in those areas dealing with academic success? Would you?
Absolutely, because it would be a partnership, and if they are our consultants telling us this is what we need in order to advance this process within the school, I, as a superintendent, I'm going to support that.
Okay.
And we absolutely have that capacity. Yes. It would just be if it was more time.
Okay.
Then, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Just a clarifying question for the staff at ANET. Do I understand that you do have capacity to be a final decision-making authority?
Correct, in areas of academic instruction, yes.
And assessment.
And assessment. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Does that include coaching?
Mm-hmm. Coaching, yes. And hiring, and would be in collaboration of could be hiring of principals and instructional coaches as
right,
well.
Right, and that's where I got a little frustrated, and I apologize for the mess that I have here in terms of looking at it, but the hiring of teachers, it looks like, is only at the district level. Coaching of teachers, is the authority is only with the district and not you. Supervision of teachers, some of these, it seems to me, should be both.
And so that is based on resources. The ANET staff is not going to engage in the teacher evaluation process, so to speak. They are not going to be necessarily have the staff to sit in on interviews, but we have a plan to collaborate in regard to what processes we can develop to ensure that we're hiring appropriate staff members.
The coaching of teachers is not one of the things that ANET's doing?
So the one-on-one yeah. coaching of teachers, in terms of the time capacity, we want every one of our teachers to be coached weekly. And so given the time, we had agreed that they would support the training for our instructional coaches, for our administrators in coaching, and support the coaching, but they wouldn't necessarily be coaching teachers one-on-one. They very well may be supporting the PLC facilitation, professional development for teachers, but not necessarily having full responsibility for coaching every one of the teachers in the school.
We're in the weeds, and I'm sorry we're in the weeds, no, but you provided the weeds. So
It's really about providing the capacity. So ANET would provide the capacity of our instructional coaches to be able to provide the daily coaching that teachers would need.
Yeah. Board Member Rankin?
We are under a time limit as far as June 30th goes, as you understand. We also seem to be a little bit in a communication difficulty here. And in order for us to write a precise order, I think this would be a good time to maybe have an executive session for just maybe 10 or 15 minutes. Would
yes.
that be acceptable?
Folks?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry.
We just get a formal motion and then do vote.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
I move for an executive session to receive legal advice.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Anyone opposed? Sorry, folks. We're going to ask you to leave and enjoy our beautiful hallway.
Board Member Schroeder. Board Member Schroeder. May I read the executive
yeah, go
session?
For it. Okay.
An executive session has been moved for today's State Board meeting in conformance with 246-4023A CRS to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 246-4023A Roman numeral 2 CRS matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes pursuant to 246-4023A Roman numeral 3 CRS.
So I want to talk to the school district people, and I want to say we are apologetic to the extent that we are struggling with this, too. We want to do the very best for your kids. They're all our kids. And so I hope that, you know, I'm just going to implore on your patience. Tomorrow we will have something figured out. Many of these have been different. And so we've had to try to figure out how do we do this the right way? How do we have some level of consistency, but also address the uniqueness of each of the districts that we have to face? So thank you for coming back. I mean, I guess you could have just driven home. You don't need to come back tomorrow, hopefully. Right. But I want to thank you for your patience. This has been a struggle. And thank you for all the work that you've done the last 6 weeks. I don't want to suggest with this pile this high that you guys haven't been working very, very hard to look at this.
Thank you.
Board Member McClellan, and I'll see if I can speak better in a few minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to table item number 14.02, accountability recommendations concerning Bessemer Elementary, Heroes Middle School, and Risley International Academy of Innovation in Pueblo City 60 schools, case number 17-AR-06.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any objections, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, continue, please.
I move to amend the
agenda.
I move to amend the agenda for Thursday, June 15th, to include the accountability recommendations for Bessemer Elementary, Heroes Middle School, and Risley International to be included in tomorrow's agenda at approximately 10 a.m.
Can I have a second? Thank you. Any objection? Thank you. Thank you, folks. You do not have to come back, but we will make sure that we're communicating with you all in the morning.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll have a call in. We will have a call in number, et cetera.
Where are we?
Yeah, last year in June, we were in Pueblo.
Yep.
Yeah, we were. No, it was June. It was June.
We moved around a lot. Stay ahead of the track.
I think we were here in July.
Was it June or was it September?
June.
No.
August, we were in Grand Junction.
June and August.
It's June and August. We didn't have it July.
What about Grand Junction?
Don't we have
peach season?
No peaches this year. We're going to Burlington. What are they
going to have? Tomatoes.
Do you promise? I'll make that trip.
Corn.
Where is it?
Yeah, we might get some corn.
And where is it then? All right, we have item number 1601.
Yeah, you find, go to Kansas and turn left.
How many miles?
Okay, you guys. Thomas School District request for designation as a district of innovation and innovation application on behalf of Winona Elementary School and Monroe Elementary School. Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to call the Thompson School District up, and I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Stan Shear, and he's the superintendent in Thompson, and he can introduce the rest of his team who are with him. Hello, Dr. Shear. Thanks for making the trip down.
Stan Shear, I'm school superintendent in the Thompson School District, and I'm going to turn this over to Anne Marie Sanchez. She's our one of our elementary directors of education in the Thompson School District, and has worked directly with these two schools in developing the applications.
Thank you. Thank you. Proceed, please.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Anthes, and members of the board, I'm glad to be here today to discuss the designation of the Innovation Schools in Thompson School District, representing Monroe Elementary and Winona Elementary School. And just wondering what questions you may have. We're here to support your decision.
Do you want to tell us in 2 minutes about your two schools?
Sure.
Please.
So around a couple, I would say at the beginning of last school year, as teachers were creating their school improvement plans, the teachers had come up with a couple ideas that seemed outside of the box. And some of those would require some additional funding, as well as some flexibility in some of the part of our agreements with the Thompson Education Association. I'm sorry, I'm totally drawing a blank on words right now. And so the schools got together, and they came up with a list of things that they thought were hindering the achievement in their buildings. Both of those schools are high free and reduced schools. One of them is the highest in the district, and the other one has the most students that are free and reduced just because of the size of the school. And they're in close proximity. They both have really, their missions are to be student-centered and want to do what they feel is best for their parents and the community as well as the students. So they came up with some of these innovations together as a team, included parents in some of that decision-making as well. Including Spanish-speaking parents community at the Monroe Elementary School. They sent out surveys to the parents at Winona Elementary, got some good feedback that they're all in favor of moving towards some of these innovations that are around possibly extending the school year, the school day, additional days on the contract for teachers for professional development, with the innovations moving towards personalized learning with our school district and a competency-based education system. Some of the instructional practices and as well as some of the programs that they want to use are a little bit outside of the box from what we are currently using.
Good. Thank you. Colleagues, any questions?
Please. How many, this is for CDE. How many innovation schools do we have in the state? Do we know?
Did you say 90?
Around 90.
Around 90. And how long has the longest one been an innovation school?
2009.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I think this came out in 2008. So do we have a track record of how those are doing? Do we get that every year? Have I missed something?
Yep, there's a report.
Okay, thank you.
There's a report that we get a copy of that is sent to the legislature, and I think Mr. Durham and I are the ones who looked at that, one of the more recent reports, maybe not this year's, but last year's, and said, you know, of the districts that wanted to make changes, it didn't make necessarily a significant difference in getting the schools off of the clock.
And that, ones that have been there?
Ones that have been there a long time, right, which is one of the reasons that I think we're, in terms of our, this is not your problem, but in terms of the turnaround discussions, one of the reasons that we've been seeing both innovation and management, because just because you change the calendar itself, if you don't change a lot of the classroom practices, you're not going to get different results. And so, I mean, that's the history of that.
There's been a lot of stuff written about that recently, and I was just kind of concerned about how our state defended, but.
Yeah, I think Chalkbeat's been hitting us up on that one, too, on whether it makes a big difference. But that doesn't mean that there aren't schools where it's made a huge difference all on its own. So
I feel like that we've done a lot of research in some of the practices that they're putting in place next year to personalized learning, and some of the districts that we've studied across the nation that have really embraced the personalized learning movement, they have seen some great growth. And I think when we were looking at the innovation schools applications that are out there, ours is very unique compared to theirs. So just even knowing how they're going to be scheduling next year with grade bands, some of the blended learning opportunities that they're going to be providing students with really rigorous and important follow-through on the personalized instruction specific to those programs to make sure they're implemented with fidelity. We're just really confident that we're going to get some great results out of our plan.
Great. Good luck. Here comes the motion.
I move to designate Thomas School District as a district of innovation by approving Thompson School District as a district of innovation by approving the innovation school applications for Winona Elementary School and Monroe Elementary School.
I second that. Thank you. Any objections, colleagues? You're on. Thank you very,
thank you very,
very
much.
Much.
We appreciate it.
Oh, I don't know. I just knew it was Thompson. Just a little typo. Okay. Next item on the agenda is the consideration of Denver Public Schools' amended innovation application on behalf of Valdez Elementary School. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you. I think I'm going to turn this over to Gregory Hatcher. Come on up. And Angie McFaul. And just to let you know, this is a little bit of a different one. This school has already been designated an innovation school, so this is an amended waiver to their already existing approved innovation plan. And you guys wanted them to just come answer a few questions in addition to this.
Hi, so I'm Angie McFaul. I'm Angie McFaul. I'm the manager of accountability at Denver Public Schools.
Gregory Hatcher, Director of Public Affairs in the Superintendent's Office. Thanks for having us.
We're here on behalf of Valdez Elementary School, which is seeking an innovation plan amendment. This is a school in Northwest Denver, and it's one of the highest performing of our elementary schools. It has 63 kindergartners, or it did last year. And so my team supported Valdez Elementary in preparing this innovation plan amendment. The CDE staff has found that it meets the statutory requirements under the Innovation Schools Act, so we're just here to answer any questions.
So are you not waiving kindergarten readiness? I'm trying to find it here.
That is the amendment they are seeking to make to their plan, is to waive the kindergarten readiness assessment for their kindergarten.
Why?
So I can't speak as the principal of the school or anything like that. My understanding is that the school has a number of other assessments that they use that are vertically aligned with their rest of their elementary school program, that they have systems around for continued coaching and teacher professional development that they want to use instead of their TS Gold assessment.
And do they know that there are other assessments besides TS Gold? The board's been working very hard to find additional assessments that require less identifiers, or I can't remember what the terminology is, to make it easier.
I have not discussed that with
the school. Did you listen to our discussion this morning?
Yeah, we did. We did hear around the D11 discussion that took place. Absolutely, Madam Chair, and I think from our perspective, and this being a little bit different request than what D11 was requesting in terms of a full district waiver on this issue. Many of you know, Denver Public Schools certainly values ensuring that around kindergarten readiness, be it TS Gold or other assessments that our charters use, that our innovation schools, district run schools use, it meets the standards that you all have set, and it's something that's very important to us on the early literacy kindergarten readiness piece as we continue to move forward. And as Andrew said, I think from our perspective, we're here to support Valdez with this request, knowing that you all may want additional information from Valdez directly about kind of the request, but they are doing this under the auspices of their current innovation plan from the state and Denver Public Schools.
Board Member Mazza.
So you you two are with the district.
Correct.
But the school who wants the kindergarten waiver is not here.
Correct.
That's been our standard process when we're bringing forward innovation plan amendments or charter school waivers.
But you're not entirely sure why they want the waiver?
I sat in on some of the planning meetings and am speaking from the experience of having heard them talk about it. So that's my understanding from that experience.
Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Dill, is, since this is now an innovation waiver request, is the board now, the statute passed changing standards is not yet in effect, I think.
I believe that's correct. It's likely July 1st.
And so it's actually August 9th.
August 9th.
And so we're under the old statute, which says we have to find, in order to reject this, we would have to find that there's harm.
That is.
I mean, how close am I from memory?
the way I've generally put it is that you have to find that it would if it doesn't make anything worse.
Yeah.
As I recall, it's a decrease in educational achievement or budgetarily.
Academic achievement.
Yeah. Academic achievement. Right.
Colorado Springs was not looking for an innovation waiver, and I think the standards are different. Now, I think we've equalized those standards effective August 9th, but
correct.
I would suggest that the legal standard for this is significantly different than the one that we applied to Colorado Springs.
Yeah, the actual language.
No, you don't. No, I agree with you. We don't have to like it.
It is likely to result in a decrease in academic achievement in the innovation schools or innovation school zone, or is not fiscally feasible.
And what's the status of the school?
The status is that they are currently an innovation school, and they have been renewed now as well.
I'm talking about their accreditation status.
Oh,
I'm
they
sorry,
are.
Gr-
sorry,
that right.
They are green on our SPF.
And have been, I think, you know, as Angie, sorry, Madam Chair, as Angie mentioned, I think, in terms earlier in her comments, in Northwest Denver has been and continues to be one of our strongest strongest elementary schools in the region.
And have you been using TS Gold, the light or the full strength?
The school has been using TS Gold in compliance with state law.
So which one, the light or the full strength?
I'm not prepared to answer that.
Oh.
Do the schools have a choice in your district?
A choice?
Between which kindergarten readiness assessment they use, or does the district mandate one of them?
I believe they have a choice.
Absolutely.
Between the ones that we've approved?
Yeah.
Thank you.
The ones you've approved.
Board Member Masnick.
No, but it is.
I'm ready to move.
Move.
Where we are.
I have to find it. I shouldn't say I was ready.
Oh, did you?
Where is it?
16.02.
Here we go.
Well, obviously, you're engaged and you're getting things.
Well, I don't know, because I have a different one than you do, Pam.
Do you?
Okay.
Do you need a motion? I found
she's
it.
She's struggling with it.
I move to affirm the amended innovation school application from Denver Public Schools on behalf of Valdez Elementary School.
It's a proper motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. I'm going to call the roll.
Board Member Durham?
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnack?
Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
No.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Love you too.
Appreciate that, Chair.
Don't come back after the 9th of August. You'll run into that other standard. You should rush them all through.
You mentioned that other standard. It's not a lot different.
It's easier,
right?
It gives us enough to work with if we decide.
Yeah.
Let me ask.
If you haven't had enough of this, folks, here we go.
Well,
what?
Madam Chair, I do. We
We did work on a little three side-by-side piece of these different waivers now that the new law has taken effect. Would you like a handout on that? If you,
sure.
You mean now that
do we need it before the
now
9th?
That we've already voted?
No.
Do we need it before this next item?
It's we've been using it just as our own cheat sheet to explain the differences. Yeah, the differences between Innovation Charter School Act and the district. And, I mean, we've been using it to kind of talk you through it, but I just thought it might be helpful to make a copy.
Thank you.
Yes, you did.
Thank you.
No, I didn't correct Mr. Durham because he was exactly right. That's the cheat sheet that you see on
the
cover.
Doesn't happen all that often.
All right. So haven't been actually, right all day. So yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, I do.
So you'll see on the Innovation Schools Act column, current, and then you'll see new, effective August 9th. And so you'll see how the language shifted.
Are we ready to move on?
Yes, we're ready to move on.
16.05, consideration of Strasburg 31J School District's request for a waiver from CRS 227-101-42A. School readiness assessments. Commissioners.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll turn this over to Monica Johnson, Superintendent, Mark Tyler, Principal, and kindergarten teachers in the district. And thank you all for driving all this way to be here to present your plan. Appreciate it.
It's really not that far.
Okay. It's still a drive. Yeah.
In mind.
I know.
We're thinking of Strasbourg, France, actually.
Is that where you'd like to be?
They have wonderful food.
So I heard you, Madam Chair, say, here we go again, or something to that effect as we were coming up, and we do know and recognize that you hear this a lot. And we appreciate the time that you're giving us today and the opportunity to come and share one more perspective on this. I am going to turn this over to Mark Taylor and the kindergarten teachers. I think getting an opportunity to speak to the teachers as well who work on it and work with it on a daily basis might give you also another perspective, and I'm sure you've heard those as well. But again, thank you so much for allowing us to be here.
Thank you for coming.
Hi, members of the board. My name is Mark Taylor. I've been with Strasbourg for 20 years. I'm actually resigning to move to Ireland, so not Strasbourg, France, but Ireland. My wife got a job over there, so I am leaving. But I am hoping to make one last good note for us and hopefully get this waiver approved. We are a very hardworking school. We are about 30 teachers, about 15 to 17 paras, depending on the year. And we have about 1,000 kids in the district, and the elementary houses half those students. It starts in preschool. We have our preschool, which we have three-year-old classes as well as four-year-old classes, and through the Strasbourg Rex district, they have some preschools. Those preschools work in tandem. They have to do things on the same level, so they all work with Strategies Gold for students who are either on the CPP program or have special needs. They do work with the Strategies Gold. We, over the last 2 years, based on the Kindergarten Readiness Act, tried two different programs. We first tried the DRDPK 2 years ago. We found that to be very labor intensive. And then we used TSG Lite last year. And once again, found it fairly labor intensive. I will be honest, I am not familiar with some of the new items that are mentioned for next year. But that being said, our teachers over the years have created a kindergarten readiness checklist. And I don't know if you have copies of that, I hope you do. I did send all of these ahead of time, but we can easily pass you some. We have some copies here, if that would help.
I would love a copy.
Okay. We're going to give you two packets. One is the single form of the kindergarten checklist. The second is a stapled packet that shows the benchmarks through the year that bounces off of or progresses from the readiness checklist we already have in place. Our school believes in what we call roaming, And so for grades 1 through 5, it's pretty much a 2.5 week period where we're getting to know the kids. We give them some pre-assessments. We get to know them socially as well as get an idea academically how they are. And then pretty much after Labor Day weekend, we start our academics. In kindergarten, based on, again, for even though it's preschool, we have full day preschool, it is getting, or for kindergarten, it's full day kindergarten, they are getting used to that. And so they take approximately 4 weeks to do that roaming, get the procedures down, get everything in place. So in that 4 week period, they are able to do that checklist and find out everything about it. And you are welcome to ask teachers. They can absolutely speak more to that than I can. Then again, the stapled list shows you the benchmarks. So you'll notice that we have academics and on the other side, social skills. We have looked at the DRDP and the TSG to say we were missing some things. We were missing some social aspects. So we wanted to make sure we include that. The one thing we find about this versus TSG or DRDPK is that this is quick. This, we can do observations, but versus sitting at a computer or with an iPad where, again, we're focusing on that, not focusing on the academics or the social aspects, we're missing out on a lot when you're doing that. We had paras for preschool, and they were still working with the academic side, if you will, but now the paras are gone. We don't have them for kindergarten. I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me. But now those paras are gone. We've added a fourth teacher instead to have lower numbers so we can, again, academically meet the needs versus having 24 and 25 in a class. So I will stop talking and see if you guys have any questions, and hopefully you'll have some questions for our teachers who are on the front lines with this.
What are you reporting to the department?
Strategy.
So last year we reported through Strategies Gold. But through this, we can still report. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. How would it be comparable to what you reported before?
So I'll be honest. We so far working with Emily Killmeyer really haven't been asked to report anything, and so. But based on the data we're collecting, which we do find reflective of TSG. Whatever they're going to ask of us, we can report on that.
Just haven't seen the format yet of how that will be reported.
Colleagues? Board Member Rankin?
How many students did you say you have in kindergarten?
We have approximately 78 total next year.
And how long have you been in performance at that level in your schools?
The elementary has not been below performance since we've been given the rankings.
Okay.
We, in fact, received a Governor's Distinguished Improvement Award this past year.
How many schools are we talking about here?
One.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, did you say one?
Mm-hmm. One, yes. Elementary, yep.
Board Member Mazza?
You have a preschool, and did you say you have a preschool and you also have a rec center?
It has a preschool as well.
Does your preschool do screening?
Yes.
Assessment? What is their assessment?
Teacher strategies.
Yeah,
they use TSG. So you do use TS Gold there?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So most of those students come into your kindergarten then?
Yes.
And
about
is the data.
75%.
Then the data is transferred to you, so you know.
Yes.
Thank you.
It is interesting that the students who come from those preschools, how much more ready they are than the students who were either in daycares or with families at home. And so again, that's between 70 and 75% of the students who are already ready based on that.
I'll just ask. What about free and reduced lunch? What is the percentage of kids in kindergarten that are free and reduced lunch?
Across our district, it's very low. We have about 20 to 25% across our district who are free or reduced.
Okay. That's
a good thing.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion.
What percentage of your kids don't go to preschool? You just said that.
We figure about 25 to 30% do not. But and in fairness, we have a limit, 16 kids per class at most in the four-year-old programs that we have. And so those are pretty full.
You have a capacity issue?
Yes.
How many students is that altogether?
So we have three.
What's the total round figure?
We have 45 preschool students every year, approximately, in the four-year-old program that will go into the kindergarten the following year. That's at the elementary. And then there are approximately 30 more, I believe, at the rec center because they have a morning program and an afternoon program. I think they have both for a four-year-old. So again, that's approximately another 30. So that's where we get about 70. And then we have, the students who didn't come, so that's where we get about the next 10 or so after that.
Do y'all maintain, keep pretty much the same number of kindergarten kids who then move to first grade? So
yes.
Through the preschool kindergarten transition, it's pretty stable, isn't it?
Yes. Kids. Yeah. We have a little fluctuation, but not a lot.
Right. Okay.
Thanks. And we each had 23, 24, 25 kids this year. And we've lost our paras now for this next school year. So we've added a fourth teacher. And our numbers right now look about 17, 18 per class without a para.
Board Member Rankin?
I just want to thank you all for coming today. It's very impressive. I move to approve the waiver request from Strasburg 31J School District for CRS 22-7-1014, paren 2, paren A, school readiness assessments.
Second.
I'm going to call the roll, please.
Steve Durham? Or Board Member Durham? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnak?
Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
No.
We're never going to get this figured out.
I'm not like
that. Thank you.
Woohoo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
We should all go into analysis, I think.
We should.
This is nuts. Next item is School Turnaround Leaders Development Grant Program. Consideration of recommended. Ms. Masnick?
Which?
Pam?
Which number?
1701.
Thank you.
Consideration of recommended districts and schools for funding for the second round of School Turnaround Leaders Development Grant Program.
All right.
Is staff prepared to give an overview?
Yes, I believe so. I believe I'm turning this over to Peter Sherman. Come on up, Mr. Sherman. And this is the proactive side of the other work you all are doing. So.
Good afternoon. I think I may be the last agenda item or close to it, so thank you for your patience. So this agenda item today is to present our recommendations for participants through the School Turnaround Leaders Development Program to award the remaining funds that we have left over from this year. In April of this year, we awarded $1.7 million and change to 11 districts and a number of schools. There were $213,000 in $213,402. No, I'm sorry, I'm not speaking right. $213,402. Excuse me. For the second round, and so we decided to run a second round of participant RFP to expend those dollars. In that, we had a very shortened application process, but in that time, we received 10 applications for a total requested award of $960,000. So, quite a bit of interest in the second round. All of the applications went through our standard competitive grants application process, and we are recommending today approval for four of those applicants, which include four district schools and two charter schools. that if those awards are approved, that we would be able to allocate and award out all of the remaining funds for this year. So just in review, this grant program identifies leadership development programs for low-performing schools and districts, and it also supports and awards funds for school districts, for school leaders, charter school leaders, and district leaders and aspiring teachers, and teachers that are aspiring leaders to be able to attend any of those identified leadership development programs. The board's role in this process is to approve these funds, and that's necessary in order to award funds. And then these are the districts that we're bringing for recommendation. And I apologize profusely, but slide 5 had to be updated. There were some numbers that were not quite accurate, so Busy just passed out a revised version. But these are the four districts and charter schools that we have recommended for funding. West End School District, Charter School Institute with one of their schools, Montessori del Mundo, Denver Public Schools for one of their charter schools, Rise Up Community Charter School, and then Denver Public Schools for three of their district schools. And that, again, those awards would utilize the remaining funds.
Board Member Flores, question?
Yes, I do. How many administrators will take advantage of this in the Montessori del Mundo Charter School?
Thank you for your question. I believe there are two.
And Denver Public Schools?
Thank you for your questions. Just give me a moment. I'm sorry, I don't have exact numbers. I can certainly look that up. It'll just take me a minute. But the participants are, for Denver Public Schools, are both principals, and I believe there may be a district leader, staff leader as well.
Okay,
within
so that's
that pool.
Three.
Yeah, are you asking for the difference between administrator participants versus teacher participants? Because there are some teachers that are
yes,
in
I'm
some
asking
of these.
For all the participants, and if you have teachers,
sure.
I'd like to just I look at the difference between Denver Public Schools at the University of Denver, and then that catapult. Why can't they go to Denver Public? I mean, University of Denver, which is that's a big difference, unless there are so many.
I'm sorry that I don't know the answers exactly, but there are 13 participants that are that have been identified in those four applications to participate. So 13 individuals, and I apologize, I just don't know how many of those are teachers versus administrators.
So that's with the Montessori del Mundo Charter School? You're talking about 13 individuals?
No, 13 total.
At the very bottom.
13 total.
I know, but
Montessori del Mundo, I believe there are four individuals, and right. I believe two of them are administrators, and two are teacher leaders, is my recollection.
All right. But $83,000, that's a lot of money. So it's
$80,000.
So I'm...
paper materials.
I was just hoping that you would tell me that, you know, you had 12. I didn't see the individuals up here. That's a lot of money for catapult. So that means that each one is about $40,000. $40,000. Catapult charges about $40,000 per leader.
Per leader. Is that okay?
It's for a two-year program is what their how their program works.
So to go back to the conversation we had this morning about budget and school improvement funds and what's available and reallocating, I think this is what the work we want to do this summer and think about where we do have resources. The state is investing $2 million into this program every year, and thinking about, is this the best return on investment possible the way the funding is allocated through School Turnaround Leaders Grant. There's this important component, and there's some other components that are important too in terms of system support. So this is all the kind of thinking we want to do around these grants.
So I'll ask another question. Is this kind of leftover money from the year that you have to spend?
Yes, this was, you all, when you voted in February, I can't remember what month it was, in April for the first round, we didn't have applicants that used all the entire money of the grant program. So they reopened the grant to be able to expend the money that the state invests into turnaround leaders.
And so we only had four applicants? I mean, four different districts that applied, or how many districts applied for this?
Sure, and I'm sorry, I breezed through that quickly, I think. But we had 10 applicants that applied for up to $960,000 on the second round. So the applications that we're bringing you today are a subset, so four out of 10 applications, and for the remaining $213,000 out of about 960 requested.
Board Member Masnick.
I always feel like we have to start at the beginning. What what are these grants actually for? Like, so it says the School Turnaround Leaders Development Program. So that makes it sound like there's one program, but they're actually going to different programs that have different costs?
Yes. So,
and who decides? Do the participants say this is the program we want to go to?
Sure. And if I may, I'll back up 3 years when this grant was first established by statute. And what it allowed for was there was a first round of RFPs that we would release for providers. So looking for organizations that are leadership development providers specifically for low performing schools and districts. And we've come to you with, I believe, four different times to identify providers. And so we now have a list of, I think there's eight or nine different providers on our list that have been identified in this program. And then each year there's a second round and sometimes another round for participants, for districts to apply or for charter schools to apply for funding in order to be able to attend, so to pay tuition and travel expenses to attend some of those identified leadership development providers. So the districts, when the RFPs go out, they say, here are the identified programs that you can apply for, and the application, which we've shared with you, asks for them to extensively provide rationale around what are the needs of the school and the leadership development that you need, and how would we ask them to identify a leadership development program. So we ask them to identify one or more of those that they want to apply for funds in order to be able to attend, and they have to really rationalize and justify why those programs would support them and change the leadership practices at the school.
What's the difference between round one and round two?
So as Alyssa was saying, there's $2 million that are allocated to this grant program each year. There's $100,000 that can go to FTE, so there's $1.9 million throughout the year that can be distributed through grants. So in April of this year, just 2 months ago, you approved, $1.7 million in participants, and that went out to 11 different districts that had applied.
But why did we only do 1.7? Why are there two rounds is my question.
We didn't award all of the money earlier this spring, because
Did it have to do with the funds available?
It had to do with the applications, and so there were some costs that were in some of the applications that we felt like were not acceptable, that didn't quite meet the standards. So in a lot of cases, we offer awards for less than what are requested, but we were able to award to 11 districts, and I believe all but one that applied received some award in April.
And the one that didn't receive awards in April wasn't actually eligible. They weren't priority improvement or turnaround. So all the requests were honored, maybe not at the full amount that they were asked for, but at the amount that was reasonable to CDE. So we went back to the districts and said, look, there's still money left.
Did you say priority improvement or turnaround are not eligible?
The school wasn't priority improvement or turnaround that it applied, because they're the only ones that are eligible.
Okay. What about who? I know I've asked this before, and I get frustrated that we don't see who's applied and who was rejected and why. Okay. And I know there's multi-online district or schools that would like to participate more fully in this kind of stuff, and they're in priority improvement and turnaround. And I don't understand why they're not getting these opportunities.
I mean, I don't know that it's our practice to make public all of the applicants that have applied. I'm not quite sure what our policy is around that. If we've shared that,
we can share that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think I'm happy to provide that information for you if you'd like.
I would like to have that. Yes. Okay. Oh, and what's the $100,000 FTE? What's the role of that person?
Sure, those funds go to support in a number of different positions, mostly, I believe, all in my office that are for the administration of this grant program.
So it's not one person.
It's the equivalent of one person, but there are a number of people, including myself and a couple of my staff members, that do the work. So we allocate those funds according to the percentage of work and roles that we play in that.
To monitor the.
So the work that's involved, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yes. The work that's involved in managing this program has been communicating with provider organizations and with districts, writing RFPs and releasing those and going through the process of reviewing. We bring in teams to do the actual reviews, but there's work around that. There's a fair amount of communication that occurs with districts and with our providers once awards are made, so managing and ensuring that folks that have applied to be to go through different training actually go through those trainings. And then there are annual reports that are written so there's work involved in that as well. And there are probably some things I'm not remembering.
Finally, I'm wondering about return on investment too. What can you tell us about? And again, I would want more specifics on that too, about how many have participated and what kind of an impact having in terms of how are their schools now doing, schools and districts?
Sure.
Because they're turnaround or priority improvement schools. Where are we seeing it move the needle?
We have, and I think there are a number of schools. And so our goal, as was discussed this morning a little bit, is to really try to align some of our supports. And some of our ESSA work is to try to bring some of this leadership development and these providers into alignment with the rest of our supports. But we have seen a number of these schools that have made changes. We are challenged by a formal evaluation of the program, because let's say you send an assistant principal to a training that goes on for a year or two. How do we measure and be able to track and thread through sort of the impact that leader has had on school performance? It's been challenging to do that. You've had access. We've completed two of the reports so far that we've submitted to you all and to the legislature, and the reports are not as thorough as we would like them to be. We've shifted our strategy around the evaluation this year by creating surveys, and we're hoping that information will be synthesized and analyzed by the early fall, and be glad to share that with you as well.
And in a number of cases, you have more than one program directed, and the rub comes when you, it's the same as what helps kids. It's usually more than one intervention, and then isolating the return on investment of just one piece of it is pretty much impossible.
One of our parameters is we won't award funds to multiple programs within a school, but there are certainly districts that have multiple that are engaged in multiple programs.
Well, that's good. That's helpful. Mm-hmm. Board Member Rankin?
I think Board Member Mazanik asked similar questions, but I had the same ones, and also I'm sure Ms. Pearson is looking at a lot of this money, how well it's spent in return on investment and all that. Does the person themselves, like if I'm a teacher, do I submit my own, or does the principal of my school submit it for me? Or how does that work?
The applications are submitted by districts or by the Charter School Institute or by a charter school directly.
So a teacher would have to go to the district, say, I'm interested, or the district might say to the teacher, you need to be interested in this.
Kind of. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I do just want to clarify one thing. So in round one, we did fund a number of districts and charters, and an online charter was in round one. So just so you know.
For a very small amount. Versus other district schools getting a ton.
Okay. Do I have a motion? If there are no further comments.
I move to approve the recommended districts and schools for funding for the School Turnaround Leaders Development Grant Program.
Proper motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Who seconded? Okay, good. Any opposition?
Well, who is?
Unanimously. I give up or I surrender.
Oh, it's Groundhog Day. The next item on our agenda is a notice of rulemaking for the rules for the operation, maintenance, and inspection of school transportation vehicles 1 CCR 301-26. Don't say anything about being early.
I move we give notice of rulemaking.
Oh, okay. Second.
I don't think we need an overview because we just had an overview last time. Right?
Yes. Nobody in here.
Any opposition to that motion?
No.
Good. Awesome. Nice work. Board member Jeremy.
Yep.
Notice of rulemaking for the rules for the Colorado Read Act 1 CCR 301-92.
Yep.
Commissioner.
Thank you. You guys flummoxed me by moving so quickly.
You never know when we're going to just spring.
I love that, but I really am very pleased. So, I believe I am turning this over to Dr. Kolfman. This is the Read Act rules, right? So I believe I'm turning this over to Dr. Kolfman and Elisa Dorman, who is probably on her way here because we're a little early. So
we're flying.
So I'll use my
stalling tactics?
Yes, exactly. I was going to say entertainment tactics.
Do you sing?
Very, very poorly.
We could do a duet then.
Oh, I think so. My father and I always joke about that, how we could be like the least talented father-daughter team ever. So as Elisa comes in, I know that there were a couple questions this morning. Our board member Mazanek had some questions just around the amendments to the READ Act that just passed during this legislative session. So we've set up our presentation for you today to just kind of give really very broad overview of a few things and then provide opportunity for questions that you might have about how the changes to the READ Act will affect the rulemaking process for today. So now we are really stalling.
You know what? We're 50 minutes early, so she may not even be listening.
Well, we were just texting a moment ago, so hopefully
she should be.
Yes.
Momentarily.
Right.
You don't want to wing this?
I don't want to wing it.
Are these, may I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
So are these, was there a statutory change that has triggered this this proposal, and that statutory change was what?
So within the READ Act, there was a change to the identification of students who are in. Here she is. to students who are English learners, and identifying them as having a significant reading deficiency. What we're proposing in the READ Act rule change is almost a word-for-word revision of the rules to align
to the bill that just passed. So we're talking about the most recent.
Exactly. And because this is something that could affect the process for this coming school year, given that districts have the first 60 days to conduct
the initial READ Act assessment. We thought it was really important to get the rules in alignment with statute so that districts aren't confused as they begin the year. And now I will completely hand off the time to my
colleague.
Sorry,
I was listening, but Alisa Dorman grabbed everything quickly and started to try to run out the door. And our data person was trying to solve one quick question, and I was away from my desk. So thank you for the opportunity to be here to share with you information related to this item. As Melissa was saying, because of the recent passage of House Bill 1160, thank you, we are wanting to move forward so that schools and districts have the opportunity to begin this school year on this path instead of having this come at a time later in the school year. So we would like to call your attention to the following items. You have a board memo that describes this particular item. You also have a set of PowerPoint slides that we'll briefly go over, along with a redline version of the rules and an alignment document that shows what statute says to these amendments to our board rules. So if I could just take you briefly through the PowerPoint and just show you. This is what it says in statute, basically that a READ Act interim assessment is. This is what it measures. It measures the student's reading skills and phonemic awareness, phonics, vocabulary development, reading fluency, including oral skills and reading comprehension. So we have board approved assessments that you have adopted, and they have been in place now for some time. School districts began using those, all of them began using those board approved assessments this school year, and are reporting those, and there are both English and Spanish assessments on our board approved list. The second slide here shows you the timeline for assessment implementation according to the READ Act. What you'll see on this particular slide is that your board rules ask that students be screened for their reading risk at the beginning of a school year. This also aligns with the statute that was passed in House Bill 1323. There are different timelines for students depending on if they are in kindergarten or first, second, and third grade. We also have, per statute, assessment that's required at the end of the school year for data collection. And so we collect scores on students at the end of the year to determine if they do have a deficiency. And that is how we also calculate the per pupil monies that are distributed back to schools. Also, you'll see on this timeline that the requirements in statute and in rule both have that students be monitored for their progress across the school year. When you look at the next slide, you'll see basically what the rule changes that you have in front of you would change or keep the same regarding READ Act implementation. So districts continue to have the authority and power to select the board-approved assessments from the list. That would not change. They would still give the assessment at the beginning and end of the year. That would not change. And what they have here is, again, the ability now, according to the statute and in the proposed rules, the ability to determine for the English learner if they're going to administer that assessment in English or in Spanish. And then it goes ahead and it asks for some other things in the statute, like a communication to parents, so that parents would know at which point in time a student would move from a Spanish assessment to an English assessment. And again, they don't have to do this. This would be an option to districts that they can choose for their English learner population. It does say that at least one of these interim assessments in English would have to be given once the child had demonstrated partial proficiency or higher. What we've done already and will continue to do across this process, and this is our rulemaking timeline, is we've already presented this information to our English Learner Literacy Task Force. So they've already seen this information and have been given the opportunity to provide feedback. And we're here today in June to be noticing rulemaking. If you approve the notice of rulemaking, then we will announce that again through our communication outlets to schools, districts, advocacy groups, et cetera. And we'll spend the month of July during that period of interim collecting information and feedback from schools and districts and any adjustments or changes, revisions they'd like to offer, as well as feedback. And then we would come back to you in August for you to conduct a rulemaking hearing, and we would bring to you all of the information we would have collected during that period of time. If you vote to approve unanimously in August, then we'll move forward with execution, disseminating information, updating guidance. If it goes to a second hearing, that would be pushed back 1 month to September. So, yes. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
and it's going back to the READ Act implementation, and its point, and it's this one. If choosing to administer an approved interim assessment in Spanish, the district may also administer an approved interim assessment in English at the request of the student's parents. And you did state that districts would choose to send this information to the parent or not. I would say there should be, parents should be notified throughout. I mean,
this was a conversation that the English Learner Task Force had when we met, and that in the development of guidance that would go forward in the field in light of this change, I think our guidance document would reflect what you just said. It would reflect that the districts need to, as far as things that they would need to do to implement this particular change in statute, it would have criteria for parent communication.
Okay. So it's even...
if it's in the guidance as opposed to the rule, that makes it optional?
It shouldn't be optional.
I would say that guidance, statute, rule, guidance. So guidance, when we guide the field, the guidance is often used to implement towards a best practice, but it doesn't hold the same weight as your statute or rules would.
There's no reason why that couldn't be incorporated into the rule.
That would be correct, as I understand it. But
I think it should be incorporated. And I think that...
But if it's in the law. I don't think...
It is in the law. This is directly from the law.
Okay.
So I think maybe you would wish to clarify so I could take the notes and we could consider that in any revisions. I think what I heard you say is you would like, even though the law says that districts should do this...
Yes.
At the parent's request, it may not require that the communication be sent to the
and
parents.
I think it should be.
And you're asking for that communication to be
correct.
A part of your rules.
Or else it's moot. And then I think that the same should happen to rule number two. Districts may choose to administer. I think at that point, parents should be notified. Should be notified on all these, actually. And it's so important. You know, I mean, what we speak is who we are. And parents need to, at the very least, be notified as to what the district is choosing to do.
Thank you
now,
for the feedback.
I would go even further and say that the parents should have the right to choose.
They do.
Well, they don't. The district has the right, according to the law.
No, I think
no. Well, no, that's information. But should the parent, like for instance, let's say I have a child and I want my child to be taking, I ask for dual language, but I refuse to do what Denver Public Schools is doing, and that is, if it's not a dual language program, then I don't want my child to be in a, what is their term, where they, their program is they put them in Spanish only for 3 years, and then after 3 years, you know, then they're given English. And so I really believe that reading takes, it's not only language acquisition. We're talking about kids getting the ability to learn to read. And learning to read is, most of the time, there's a few kids who can, you know, teach themselves to read, but most of the time, somebody has to teach them. And so they're missing out on the language of commerce.
We're talking here about the assessment.
Well, these are points that are very, very important.
But Alyssa, it's true though, isn't it, that as we talked about this morning, it was left out of the the summary that we got this morning. But it's true that if a parent wishes their child to be assessed for reading proficiency in English, they can upon request.
That's right, but they have to be notified.
They have to be notified that they have that choice.
That's right.
I think that's
or else it's moved.
Okay, so all right.
And I think if I may clarify, so that if we were going to bring back some potential language for your consideration in this, I think that two things that I hear. One, it says that the district, if choosing to administer in Spanish, may choose to administer in English at the request of a parent. So that's already what the statute says, right? And that's what the rule is right now. But you're actually saying that you believe that there should be some consideration for a requirement for a notification to parents.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought. I wanted to just clarify.
Does the statute say may or shall?
It says may.
Yeah, so the parents really...
So the districts were
clever enough to cut the parents out of the process.
Yes.
That was Denver, who doesn't care about parents in this process.
I
recall their lobbying, just for the record.
I just am reading. I think we just checked over here that it does say may. So I think it does say may as the language in the statute.
I think this was the Denver Amendment, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And just for the record, I think it's one more example of Denver not being willing to serve the parents' wishes.
Board Member Rankin?
That's right. This can either be Alyssa, Melissa, or Alyssa.
we're dying to say that one.
what is partial proficiency? What's the definition of that?
That is hard.
That's actually, I'll take that one. That's actually a little ambiguous, because the determinations on our English language proficiency assessment doesn't specifically use that terminology. And so I think that leaves some discretion up to local school districts as to how they would define partial proficiency. And as Elisa noted, through guidance, what we can do is actually provide some suggestions about how districts might do that, so that there could be some of that consistency across districts and what they determine as partially proficient.
I could have sworn I was told this morning that there was a definition for partial proficiency.
If it's partial, then, I mean, it could be 1/8, 1/10, 1/12.
Is there any way we can make rules so that we do have a uniform definition for partial proficiency?
I think that's a question for our Attorney General's office.
I believe so. I think the first thing to do is look to see if there is a definition in the statute or a definition, related to English language acquisition that is currently in use, which could be referenced. But otherwise, I think that would be a purpose of the regulations to clarify such ambiguous statutory procedure.
Isn't there a fully proficient, partially proficient in a lot of the reporting?
Alyssa, do you want to? Mm-hmm.
FPs and PPs?
Because it's changed when the system.
Because it's changed. As non-English proficient,
limited English proficient, or fully English proficient. But that's based on, in part, the access assessment, but also body of evidence for students, too.
So,
it should
make it sure.
Madam Chair?
Sir?
Well, it would appear that if we were to define that, we might be able to overcome some of the unwillingness to test in English, because a reasonable definition of partial proficiency under the statute, apparently the statute is, shall ensure that student takes at least one of the state-approved interim reading assessments in English. So there may be some ability to ensure that some progress is made in English. And to be able to measure that progress.
Madam Chair, I think there's one clarification that I think could be important right now, because actually within the amendment that has precipitated this rule change, in Section 2, it indicates that if the student scores within the range that the local education provider determines demonstrates partial proficiency in English. Okay. So it's giving that, it's explicitly giving that over to the local education provider.
It's totally subjective. It's totally subjective. Determinant by district, correct?
And they can change it any time, too.
Right. I mean, the statute does seem to leave it entirely up to the local education
and
provider.
So,
but we could offer guidance.
Okay.
For some consistency.
We can't. For consistency's sake. I think that came up in our... just to clarify, in our English language learner literacy task force meeting, both the point Melissa made and the point that is being made here is there is some inconsistency, and there are districts who would like the guidance provided so that they can have some consistency, and that was a request. It was also noted by a district that the authority was in statute now given to the district for that determination.
So what about the limited proficiency, which may in fact be based on more than an assessment? That is a classification for our English learners, right?
So I think Alyssa may want to ask, but I would ask for clarification, as she said. So right now, when the way we do our read data to match it up is we do look at whether or not the student is non-English proficient, NEP, limited English proficient, former English, so we look at the matching of data under those criteria. I think part of the scale of your consideration that you're having right now is if non-English proficiency is pretty determined, right, and no longer being limited English proficient is determined, there's probably a pretty wide gap in that development continuum on what is considered to be limited English proficiency.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, may I just make a suggestion? I would like to sit down with you. I know I'm my brain is dead right now.
Sure.
But I would like to sit down with you and work on this.
Okay.
I need a copy of the statute before I leave today. Mm-hmm. If possible. Thank you.
We need a cut score.
Pardon me?
We need a cut score.
Yeah. Where did you find that? I don't.
It's under 19.
Well, apparently we don't get to set
a 19 points.
I would say, for a quick reference to Chairman, Board Member Durham and to the rest of you, if you were to look at the document that is the side-by-side document provided, for the two redlined changes you see the exact statute here on this side, and then you see how we've mirrored that with language that where we could eliminate some of the verbiage we did and to just make it cleaner and easier to read. Yeah. But the full statute that we copied from is here.
So the determination by the local education provider, is that new? Is that the new?
Yes, she is, and I think she understands.
That was in the stat in the.
So we have no. Yeah. So
that was in the amendment to the READ Act to the 1160 language.
That happened. So it'll be interesting.
Board Member McClellan.
I move to approve the notice of rulemaking for amended sections of the rules for administration of the Colorado Reading to Ensure Academic Development Act, 1 CCR 301-92.
Proper motion. Is there a second?
I'd like to have a discussion.
Could I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Proceed.
I think that before we vote on this session, I think we need to clean up the language some.
And this is the notice. So we have 60 days that we can work on this before you have to bring it to a vote.
We'll get a lot of input from elsewhere as well.
Okay. I'd like to make a substitute motion to lay over until the August meeting.
Oh, well, you're going to put this off forever, Steve?
No.
If I can.
I think that...
I don't know forever, but I think... I need to look at the statute and have some of the interest groups who care about.
That's what's going to come in the next 2 months. So you're going to put that off.
I'm going to make sure all of the interest groups have a chance to participate.
We're not giving notice for 2 more months?
Well, we don't meet next month. I moved to lay it over until July, but we're not meeting.
I'm going to vote against that. I think that's a really unfortunate.
That's fine. I just make the motion if there's a second.
I'm sorry.
Substitute motion to lay this over until August.
I agree.
I'll second that.
Yes. Okay. I third it.
So now we vote on that motion.
Voting?
Yeah, if this doesn't pass.
For Board Member Durham's substitute motion, Board Member Durham?
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
No.
Board Member Masnack?
Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
No.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
No.
I'm just making sure the kids aren't tested. That is just terrible.
So we have...
It's putting on 2 months for people in school districts.
So it's 4 months.
We're putting this off 2 months.
We're putting this off 4 months now.
It's crazy.
Because you don't like the bill.
It's pretty badly written.
All right, board member reports. We're done. We're not doing anything.
We still have 1 month.
Mr. Durham, do you have a board member report?
I don't believe I do, Madam Chair. I didn't accomplish much in the intervening time between this meeting and the last. So.
Thank you. Board Member Flores.
No, I've just been talking to people about, I did get calls about why we didn't graduate on time, so I've been spending time returning calls on that.
Why we didn't graduate on time?
Why on that report? Everybody heard it on NPR.
Oh, yeah, okay. I got it.
So I still have to return some calls.
Board Member Rankin?
It's past and future, and the last month, I have to say I didn't do too much, but in the next month, I just would like to draw the attention to the fact that Commissioner Anthus and I were born on the same day. She just looks a lot better than I do.
I know, that was very exciting.
Born on the same day or the same date?
Same day.
I said date.
No, we don't know that.
So
that's the end of
my report.
Okay.
Clearly. Board Member McClellan. I had the pleasure of meeting with constituents in Aurora and constituents in Highlands Ranch, and I also attended the new member training last weekend from June 9th through 10th at the National Association of State Boards of Education, so that was very informative. I appreciated the opportunity to attend a bill signing for House Bill 17-1294, Mr. Weissman's bill regarding counting ascent program students in graduation rates. And I'm looking forward to participating in the executive education program for senior officials in state and local government at Harvard during the month of July. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Board Member Masnick. Board Member Goff?
I know. It was actually a delight to get back to normal communication routine with Westminster schools. I attended the launch of their summer meals program, which actually covers, I think it's eight to ten elementary school locations and others in Adams County, Westminster District. So thousands of kids in that community are served through the meal program every year. Have spent considerable time following the back and forth and up and down and roundabout proposals in Washington, D.C., one of which is including the proposed federal budget as it impacts education in 18-19. More on that to come, depending on where it goes. It's kind of, everything's a little bit in limbo right now. Spent time again with the Adams County community, especially the youth initiative groups and so forth, and are getting ready to welcome Jefferson County's new superintendent, Jason Glass, who arrives the 1st of January, or July. July. So, looking forward to the school year when it's ready to start. So, thank you.
Thank you. So, I had a really busy month. I attended a 2-day program in Houston along with some staff, a legislator, etc., supported by the Hunt Institute, I guess, which is a deeper dive into ESSA, which is very interesting, and I actually learned quite a bit. Different ideas. I attended a celebration that was sponsored by PEBC and Comcast. They gave out 57 scholarships to students. I think they usually celebrate that at the PBC luncheon, but this time it was held at the Cable Center, which was nice to get a tour of the memorabilia of the cable industry for the last 50 years, plus sort of a nice happy celebration. I also got to attend a kindergarten event at Brown International, 106 cutest little boogies. It was just so nice to be in that situation. I miss being on the school board, not getting to go to events where there are little people. I also attended NASB at the same time as Board Member McClellan. They had a board member, and we got to meet a number of the new board members, which was very nice. I attended an education roundtable this week where I listened to a number of AEC administrators and also students from around Denver and to hear some of the concerns they have and some of the challenges they have. And it sort of occurred to me that I don't know that we have a really effective way to hear from these kids and what some of their challenges are and what are some of the things that we could be doing to help them.
Kids hear from whom?
Students. Alternative education campuses.
Thank you.
And then finally, I wanted to point out to everybody that we're going to have a conflict this late this fall between the CASB conference and the Excellence in Education National Summit. They are at exactly the same time. And I know that I'll have to go to the CASB conference because we make a presentation at CASB. So for November 29th to December 1, we've got conflicting conferences that we often, many of us at least, tend to attend both, and it's going to be conflict for sure.
You just really too bad. At CASB,
we all do. No, we all do. Which makes it, that panel. Makes it, plus, for me at least, it's an opportunity to interact with a lot of my school board members in Colorado. But that makes it kind of difficult. Okay, so I think we do not have anyone coming to speak. So we're adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9. We're going to hammer? Okay.
Hammer.
And then...